Now from the KSFR Newsroom, at noon looks at the day's top local news headlines for Tuesday, July 30th. The Santa Fe County Board of Commissioners today considers a resolution in support of same-sex marriage. The action comes as County Clerk Geraldine Salazar is named in a lawsuit for her refusal to issue a marriage license to a male couple. The county is the entity that must defend her actions. County Commissioner Liz Stefanix, a marriage equality supporter, says passage of the resolution would signal the courts to offer more guidance.
It is my position that we have support on the Santa Fe County Commission to say in a resolution, and resolutions are non-binding, but that the resolution would say that the county commission supports same-sex marriage, and that basically we want the courts to make some decisions about this conflict.
Credit ratings agency Moody's has followed through on its threat of a downgrade for City of Santa Fe bonds, but City of Santa Fe Finance Director Marcos Tapia says a one-point downgrade of bonds from the city's 2008 cycle is based on erroneous information. Moody's had said they were concerned by what they viewed as an imbalance in city payments made to public employee pension funds. Tapia says the Public Employees Retirement Association's board meets tomorrow, and representatives from Moody's are expected to attend.
PRA is going to have their actuary people there, and Moody's has been invited, and apparently Moody's will be there also. And I know PRA has an issue with them trying to just guess on liabilities without asking or receiving facts or data from PRA.
Meanwhile, bond ratings for Santa Fe from Standard & Poor's remains stable at AA and at AA+ from Fitch. Electric utility PNM has restored power today to all but a few Albuquerque customers in the aftermath of a damaging storm last Friday. At the outage's peak, some 30,000 Duke City customers were left in the dark. Thousands remained without power as of yesterday. PNM enlisted the aid of crews from neighboring Texas to help with repairs. Those crews are now focusing on repairs to damaged infrastructure, not causing outages. The Environmental Protection Agency has issued a draft permit for Chevron to make discharges from its Cuesta mining facility into the Red River. Tomorrow, the EPA holds a public hearing and Q&A session on the matter at Cuesta's VFW post. The revised permit updates the previous 2006 agreement by eliminating one of the mine's discharge points and adding another. It also sets limits for pollutants including arsenic, cadmium, copper, lead, mercury, and zinc. Chevron's mine focuses on molybdenum, a transitional metal used for the manufacturing of armor, aircraft parts, electrical contacts, and industrial motors. Governor Martinez joined a host of local officials attending today's ribbon-cutting ceremony for the new interchange bridge along New Mexico 599 at County Road 62. The bridge was constructed to provide motorists with a safer means of crossing 599 to reach neighborhoods and facilities on the west side of Santa Fe. Prior to its building, the area had been the scene of several driver fatalities. Santa Fe's Public Works and Land Use Committees have given their approval to plans for expanded areas of beer sales and consumption at ball games in Fort Marcy Park. It's currently restricted to a small beer garden. Permitting beer sales was a key component for the semi-pro Fuego team to take up residence at the field. The matter now heads to the Finance Committee next week and to full City Council in September. Tourism in New Mexico has rebounded to pre-recession levels, according to new statistics released by the Martinez administration. For 2012, it's believed to have increased some 7% to a record $5.9 billion. Also reaching record high levels are jobs related to tourism, increasing by some 4,200 positions. Overall, 32 million people are said to have visited the Land of Enchantment in 2012, the third straight year of growth. National Real Estate Data Clearinghouse CoreLogic is out with its newest look at foreclosures across the nation as of June. New Mexico's foreclosure rate has declined, although such inventory is higher than that of our surrounding neighbor states. Some 2.8% of mortgage properties here are in foreclosure proceedings, representing a drop of 0.6% over last year. Another 5% are considered in serious delinquency, with payments 90 days or more in arrears. And weather for Santa Fe: sunny, warm, and dry today with a high of 85, a 20% chance for showers tomorrow, increasing to 40% by Thursday. Highs throughout the period will be remaining in the mid to upper 80s. This is Dan Garrity for KSFR News. At noon here on KSFR, we'll continue in just a moment.
Support comes from New Mexico Educators Federal Credit Union, where the more you participate in your not-for-profit financial cooperative, the more money you earn. For details on Earn Your Return, go to nmefcu.org or visit their branch on St. Michael's Drive.
Support for KSFR comes from the Zia Diner, home of upscale, down-home comfort food, serving hormone and antibiotic-free beef, chicken, and eggs, and with many gluten-free options for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. The Zia Diner also offers European soccer and lots of other sporting events televised in the bar, as well as evening performances by local singer-songwriters and bands. For a schedule of upcoming events and their full menu, visit ziadiner.com. See you at the Zia.
At noon on KSFR, segues now to today's feature stories. Among the multitude of living things struggling with our state's drought conditions are horses. Phil Carter is Equine Campaign Manager for Animal Protection of New Mexico, and he joins us now. Phil, how severe have the effects of the drought been on our state's horse population?
Well, the drought is definitely kind of putting a cap on what's already been a bad situation for about the last decade or so for New Mexico's horses. And forage was kind of the last option for a lot of needy and neglected horses out there. We really started to see this starting in the last half of the last decade that, our cruelty case hotlines for animal cruelty that Animal Protection in New Mexico administers was starting to see a spike in horse calls, people just unable to feed them and not knowing what to do, and other people noticing that there are skin and bones horses out there. And doing some research, we realized that there really is no safety net programs for horses of the type we've had for dogs and cats for decades. There's no way to really get feed if you can't pay for it, or get veterinary care if you can't pay for it. So that's why we set up the Equine Protection Fund in 2009 to really offer these sort of humane options that had been lacking up to that point. When we started out, really the best New Mexico had to offer was a few struggling equine shelters that were always at capacity, always trying to scrape by and help as many horses as they could, but couldn't really keep up with the need. And so, you know, via these programs like Emergency Feed Assistance, which offers temporary assistance with hay for people who qualify, demonstrate genuine financial need that's only temporary, we're able to, you know, get some hay out to these horses and also give people a leg up so they can get back on their feet. These sort of cases should not be, you know, only up to the equine shelters to address and all of that. Just with some strategic aid with hay, we can actually keep these horses out of the shelters, keep them with their families instead of just feeding into this slaughter pipeline if they go to the sale barn, or just being abandoned out on, you know, wherever, public lands, tribal lands. When we were just starting up this program, there was a pretty well-publicized case in the Santa Fe National Forest of this horse named Prince, who was found in the forest just emaciated and near death. And it's those sort of desperate measures that we were finding people were resorting to, just in this misguided belief that maybe the horse can forage if we turn him out onto the forest land. And that's just not good enough. We have to be able to provide better for our horses.
Is there any link between the difficulties horses are having now with the appearance of that horse slaughterhouse facility in southern New Mexico?
Horse slaughter did occur in the United States through about 2007, at which point funding for inspections of slaughter facilities was taken out of the federal budget. However, it was reinstated back in 2011. The issue with horse slaughter is that it's never going to provide a humane solution to suffering of horses. It's basically a sort of misguided effort to tap into some sort of foreign market for horse meat. Americans don't eat horse meat, so there's really no need being served here domestically because of it. The problem is that slaughter facilities are not going to take in starving horses, and so what it's going to turn into is this sort of artificial market of essentially breeding horses specifically for slaughter. It's going to turn into a factory farm model for horses, and so there's no solution being presented by the horse slaughter facilities. What we need instead is a really humane infrastructure for dealing with and managing horses as humanely as possible through the sort of feed assistance that the Equine Fund offers, as well as the veterinary care assistance that our Equine Protection Fund also offers, including gelding of stallions and colts, which, you know, ensures prevention of unwanted breeding, and also humane euthanasia, which we also offer. That's to be able to humanely euthanize horses who are suffering or who are so badly injured or abused that they're never going to be rehabilitated.
And we understand Animal Protection of New Mexico has reached a milestone of sorts with horses. Could you tell us about that?
We've been offering these humane programs, including feed assistance and other veterinary assistance, since early 2010, and has been steadily increasing our impact throughout that time. We passed our 200th and 300th horse assisted back in 2012, and so we've doubled our impact in just over a year as of mid-July, helping 400 horses, donkeys, and mules. And, you know, this is a great way to really prove the viability of humane options for horses. The will really is there to help all of these needy and abused horses out there. However, we're continuing to grow our programs to ensure that we're addressing the needs of every single horse out there, as well as the needs of the shelters who come to us looking for help with veterinary care assistance, gelding stallions that come in, euthanizing horses that can't be adopted out, as well as helping the owners to feed and get vet care, and helping the law enforcement. They're charged with rounding up horses or taking in needy and abused horses. So 400 is a great milestone we've passed. We're definitely celebrating, but we're also asking the public to step up and be a stakeholder for humane equine welfare in the state. We've proven that this model can work, and now it's time for all of New Mexico's citizens to contribute just a little bit, because it doesn't take a whole lot of money to really ensure a humane life for a horse. We can feed a horse for less than $100 per month, or geld them for less than $200 to prevent any unwanted colts and fillies.
Looking ahead 5 or 10 years from now, how do you see horses faring in New Mexico?
Well, we're already seeing kind of a shift in, you know, what our greatest areas of needs are through the Equine Protection Fund, whereas first off it was kind of we were in crisis mode trying to help people feed their horses because the grass was gone, because of the drought, because hay prices were skyrocketing, because the economy continued to stagnate across the country. So we did a lot of emergency feed assistance to individuals throughout the first few years of the fund. But over the last year, we've been seeing kind of a shift, more and more demand of veterinary care as far as taking care of the needy and abused horses that are already out there with gelding support to make sure there's no breeding going on, and with euthanasia and other methods just to ensure some sort of humane care for these horses that are being taken in by the shelters and by New Mexico Livestock Board. And so I anticipate that just increasing, you know, ensuring quality of life care for horses to becoming more and more important. Not that we also shouldn't ensure feed for horses as well.
Anything else you'd like to add?
Well, I just really would like to let people know that they can have a stake in humane care for horses throughout our state. You know, New Mexico, via the Equine Protection Fund and via our great horse rescues, has really shown itself to be a leader in ensuring humane care for horses, and I think other states are learning from us. I get calls from time to time from other states, from people in other states looking to replicate what we've done here, and so I'd really like to encourage people to continue to support them. We love our donors, and we'd love to have new ones, as well as more people helping out on a volunteer capacity. And if they'd like to help out horses, they can contact me.
Very good. Phil Carter from Animal Protection New Mexico, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR, which continues in just a moment.
Support comes from the Crestone Music Festival, this weekend, August 2nd through 4th in Crestone, Colorado, featuring Bayou Boogie Blues man Tab Benoit, master West African guitarist Vieux Farka Touré, the Haunted Wind Chimes, Hit and Run Bluegrass, and much more. The festival is a two-stage, multi-genre, multicultural event with food, libations, vendors, and all-age activities. For info, call toll-free at 855-85-MUSIC or crestfest.org. That's 855-85-MUSIC or crestfest.org.
Current downtown Santa Fe temperature now at 79 degrees at 20 minutes past the hour. That's on its way to a high today expected of 85 degrees. Shortly before going to air, we caught up with Senator Tom Udall in Washington, D.C., who announced today that a New Mexico renewable energy firm has paid off its loan to the Department of Agriculture.
I'm proud to announce great news for renewable energy development in New Mexico. Sapphire Energy has paid off its entire loan guarantee to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Sapphire is a new energy company with a location in Columbus that is transforming algae into crude oil. They call their facility the Green Crude Farm. It's one of our state's great examples of renewable energy's potential, and they are on the road to success. Since 2009, I've worked with them and the federal government to see that their algae to crude oil commercial facility became a reality. Through our efforts, Sapphire was awarded a $54.5 million loan guarantee from the USDA and a $50 million grant from the Department of Energy. And I was able to secure over $900,000 in the FY 2009 appropriations bill. Thanks to the early investment, the Green Crude Farm is operational and producing renewable crude oil on a continuous basis. They are reducing our dependence on foreign oil and our carbon footprint and creating jobs for hardworking New Mexicans. I'm proud to have supported their efforts early on, and I'm very pleased to see them repay this loan ahead of schedule.
Senator Udall also introduced a bill last week with big implications for our state.
Last week, I was proud to introduce an important bill for Indian Country, the Native American Housing Assistance and Self-Determination Reauthorization Act, or NAHASDA, as it is called. This is a signature law for the tribes. Housing is a serious problem on tribal lands. Over a quarter of the households on reservations lack adequate plumbing and kitchen facilities, safe, well-built housing and infrastructure. They are the building blocks for strong, healthy communities. NAHASDA helps address this critical need. The bill is in need of updating. Tomorrow, the Indian Affairs Committee will hold a hearing and begin working to get it passed. As a member of this committee, I will be working to make sure that Congress meets its trust responsibilities to Indian Country and honors the unique state-to-state relationship with tribes.
And finally, the senator met this morning with Santa Fe Fire Chief Eric Litzenberg, who is in Washington himself, addressing a task force on climate change and wildfires.
I met with Chief Litzenberg just maybe an hour ago. He was very encouraged with the forum that he participated in, thought that people were very receptive to what he was saying, and carried, I think, a very good message, this message that with the drought, with the drier climate in the West, we're going to see more catastrophic fires. They're going to cover more acreage. We've seen we broke some records the last couple of years, and that's going to mean additional resources needed, whether it's air tankers or firefighting crews or some other resources that need to be thrown into the effort. And I'm going to work very hard to make sure at the national level that we put the resources into firefighting that needs to be there.
Senator Tom Udall in Washington, D.C., speaking with KSFR earlier today. And at noon on KSFR, we'll continue in just a moment.
Ebullient mezzo-soprano Susan Graham performs a title role of Jacques Offenbach's riotously funny The Grand Duchess of Gerolstein this summer at the Santa Fe Opera. All's fair in love and war games at the Gerolstein Military Academy, with its dashing uniformed cadets and apple-cheeked local sweethearts cheering them on, with the Academy's patroness, the Grand Duchess herself, in sexy pursuit. Far from being a lady of a certain age, this Grand Duchess is an amorous aristocrat with an eye for Fritz, her favorite young cadet, sung by the dynamic American tenor Paul Appleby. Soprano Anya Matanovic completes the love triangle. Emmanuel Villaume conducts. The Santa Fe Opera's Grand Duchess of Gerolstein promises lots of laughter and fun. Learn more about this production and the entire upcoming season by visiting santafeopera.com or by calling 800-280-4654. That's 800-280-4654. This message is sponsored by the Santa Fe Opera, a tax-exempt organization.
24 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. Once again, Santa Fe has been recognized by a major publication as a great place to live. KSFR News reporter Charles Maynard joins us now to file this report.
It's no secret among those of us who live here that Santa Fe is a great place to call home. And yet again, a major national publication agrees. Kiplinger's Personal Finance has named us one of the 10 most livable small or mid-sized cities in the United States. Kate Noble is the acting director of the Housing and Community Development Department for Santa Fe.
Santa Fe has been named one of the 10 great places to live by Kiplinger's Personal Finance, and this is a ranking that emphasizes livability in small and mid-sized cities. Basically, they looked at cities with a population of less than a million and with a wide range of benefits they considered, including good jobs, reasonably priced homes, decent schools, and good access to health care. So it's really a reflection of Santa Fe's incredible quality of life being nationally recognized by one of the big names in personal finance and business forecasting.
It's difficult to pinpoint one or two favorite assets of our city.
I don't know that there's any one thing. If there was, and that wasn't even on the list that they provided us with, I would say the natural environment kind of points the way for everything. And I think that's often the reason that we have such a great quality of life. It's not just that we have great weather and clean air. We were recognized as one of the cities with the cleanest air recently as well. But it is that we have spectacularly beautiful landscapes and the fact that we basically live in a river valley of the Santa Fe River and have the mountains so nearby and so accessible, and you can drive up and see the environment change so quickly to be deep in the mountains or deep in a canyon in the mountains and something like that is simply that people like to be here and they sort of fall in love with the place. That makes them stay, start a company in Santa Fe, and so often it's simply because they like it here. And it's not just the environment, I should say. It's also because people fall in love. Santa Fe really does have a special quality that I think is partly what makes community not a cliched word here. There is a small town feel to it that you can know your neighbors, know your colleagues, and truly be a community. And that is much more of the glue even than something that's just the beauty of the natural environment, not to in any way dismiss the power of that, but the human factor is incredibly important and powerful as well.
Ms. Noble says publicity like that from Kiplinger's probably brings more visitors and perhaps even residents to the city.
Probably in sort of a nominal way that causes more people to visit and move here. I think it's an amplification, if anything, of the things we know about Santa Fe. And for someone out there who is thinking about relocating, you never know if they see this report at the right time and decide, I'll go check out Santa Fe. I mean, we've heard stranger stories than that before as to how people get here. That's almost a more usual something. Or, yes, they have a friend here and they see the report and they decide to check it out. I think that it's more that, and, you know, for us here in Santa Fe, it can be just a little bit of a source of pride, maybe some bragging rights, that we keep getting named to a variety of different and important lists, whether they be primarily around our tourism and what kind of place this is as a vacation destination to visit, or whether it's something more like this that really is a validation of the quality of life and all of the great things that Santa Fe has to offer for those of us that live here. And both of those groups of people, tourists and those that might move here or residents, are very important to our economy in different ways.
When asked her most and least favorite things about Santa Fe, she had this to say.
I think my least favorite thing about Santa Fe is being stuck in traffic. And it's not even remotely bad compared to where I used to live, Manhattan, at one point. But it's still, it's for some reason, because their traffic is never that bad, it's almost more infuriating because you don't anticipate it. My favorite thing about Santa Fe, I'm going to have to go back to my earlier answer. It's a tie between the people and the environment itself. I mean, right now is such an exceptionally beautiful time of year. I feel like every time I walk outside, I'm just incredibly grateful to live in such an incredible place. The feeling of the sun, the air, looking around after it's been raining and everything's green and gorgeous. But if there were one thing I'd say I could absolutely not do without, it is the people, the quality of humanity. And again, to use the word that I think is really not a cliche here, but the fact that this is a community and there is a sense of us all sort of taking care of each other and often working together here. I think that is my single favorite thing about Santa Fe.
Kate Noble from the city of Santa Fe. For KSFR News, I'm Charles Maynard.
Exactly 12:30 here in the KSFR newsroom. There's no finer time than the bottom of the hour to spend 60 seconds with our resident curmudgeon, Christopher Hagen.
I'm not the most forward-thinking of people. Now, understand, it's not like I go to Civil War reenactments or have a closet full of 8-tracks containing all the hit songs from a Revolutionary War. I don't sit around thinking about and longing for the good old days. Who knows when they were? A question so beautifully expressed by Woody Allen's Midnight in Paris, but I'll admit I am slow to embrace new technology. I had a DVD player for several years before I took it out of the box and plugged it in. Smartphone? I'm being proverbially dragged along with the mandatory kicking and screaming into that one. But why? My flip phone still works, and it can do smart things like call people without using telephone wires. I'll admit it, I'm afraid of new technology, positively afraid. The same way I'm afraid of chocolate candy and chocolate cake and almost any kind of ice cream and pepperoni pizza and fine wine on the Riviera. For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.
And with that, we conclude today's edition of At Noon. Dan Garrity with you here at the news desk, with thanks to my contributing colleague today, Charles Maynard. We'll be back with more news of and for New Mexico for you tomorrow, and as always, we hope you join us.